call the resources meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, March 2, 2016. Good evening. Welcome back, and let the record show that the House Resources Committee was convened at 6:02 p.m. Present are Representative Johnson, Representative Josephson, Representative Seitz, Representative Tarr, Representative Olson, my fellow co-chair, Representative Dallarico, and myself, Representative Benny Narayak. That the record reflect, we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off your cell phones. Hello to Julie from... Oh, hello, Julie.
Summers.
Hello, Summers from House Records. Hello to Matt from LIO. I didn't know you picked you here. Sorry. This evening we will continue to hear invited testimony regarding the potential impact of House Bill 247. Because we have four more presenters, we are limiting all presenters to 15, 20 minutes. We'll allow questions until the presentation is complete, then allow for 5, 10 minutes so they can finish. They can we can try to finish by 8:30. We have also written testimony from Nana Corporation and also Doyon Corporation that will be entered into the record. If you have specific questions beyond that, send those questions to my staff, and we'll obtain answers and share those with committee members. First, we're going to welcome Ms. Marianna Hall. She's the Executive Director of the Resources Development Council. Please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and begin. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you. Good evening. My name is Marliana Hall, and I am the Executive Director of the Resource Development Council, commonly referred to as RDC. To introduce myself briefly to those of you who do not know me, I have been with RDC for almost 9 years, but this is my first opportunity to testify in front of your committee. I'm originally from Nome. I graduated from Chigayak High School and went on to graduate from the University of Anchorage, Alaska. I live in Anchorage with my husband and my son, and we hope to live and work in Alaska for the rest of our lives. While I don't have a formal presentation today, I do think it's important for me to be here to offer RDC's perspective on House Bill 247. I do have written testimony that I will provide to the Resources Committee after my presentation this evening. RDC is a statewide business association comprised of individuals and companies from Alaska's oil and gas, mining, forest products, fishing, and tourism industries. Our membership consists of nearly 400 corporate members and hundreds of individuals and includes all 12 of the land-owning Alaska Native corporations, local communities, organized labor, and industry support firms across the entire economy, all of which depend on a healthy oil and gas industry. RDC's purpose is to encourage a strong, diversified private sector in Alaska and to expand the state's economic base through the responsible development of our natural resources. As you can see, RDC's members are truly the lifeblood of Alaska's economy. We believe the best approach to expand the economy and generate new revenues for the state is to produce more oil, attract more tourists, harvest more fish, and mine more minerals. Increasing taxes on our natural resource industries will not increase production for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. It will not encourage tourists to come to Alaska. It will not encourage the development of more mines, and it will not increase investment in the fishing industry. Higher taxes in this low-price commodity environment will likely deter investment and lead to lower state revenues and a weaker private sector in the long run. With regard to House Bill 247, raising taxes on companies that are reporting record losses and are in negative cash flow is not sound fiscal policy. According to the Energy Information Administration, oil prices today are not only the lowest we've seen in a decade. When adjusted for inflation, they are the lowest since the mid-1980s. In less than 2 years, oil prices have fallen 70%. This obviously has impacted state revenues, but has also impacted the industry, which receives 100% of its revenue based on the commodity price. This is clearly not the time to raise taxes on the primary engine of Alaska's economy. The oil industry is struggling with low oil prices and tight capital markets. Companies are cutting budgets and making tough investment decisions. Increasing taxes on the industry at this time will compound a bad situation and jeopardize new investment, further damaging our private sector economy and shrinking the economic pie for everyone. The oil industry is the foundation of Alaska's economy, and keeping it strong is key to sustaining the private sector, Alaskan jobs, state government, and our overall economy. A healthy and strong oil and gas industry is also vital to progressing the Alaska LNG mega project. To sustain our economy, Alaska needs to encourage new investment, jobs, and production by maintaining a stable, competitive tax structure. When you incentivize something, you get more of it. Look at the current tax policy. It has brought new exploration, jobs, and continued investment to the state. It has stabilized North Slope production and has somewhat shielded Alaska from the massive cutbacks that have occurred elsewhere. Following the enactment of the tax law in 2013, Alaska saw $5 billion in new investment across the state from legacy companies to new companies that have made big investments in good faith under the current regime. The sudden and dramatic drop in oil prices have slowed progress as companies struggle with low cash flows. But Alaska is in a much better position because of those investments. The tax policy has done what it was supposed to do, increase investment. Conversely, House Bill 247 moves us in the wrong direction. It will represent the sixth major tax change in Alaska in the last 11 years. Raising taxes when prices go up and then raising them again when prices go down creates instability and fails to provide investors with fiscal certainty. HB 247 will make Alaska less competitive for global investment and risks future projects that would put more oil in taps, which should be our number one goal. Alaska needs a plan that grows the pie bigger for everyone. RDC's members are not only the oil companies that will be directly impacted by HB 247, but also companies in the support industries and Native Corporation Ventures. Alaska's Native Corporations are and will continue to be economic engines in Alaska. A large part of ANC's success we see today is a result of purchases or joint ventures of oil and gas support industry companies across the state. These investments not only create jobs for Alaska Native shareholders, but often result in job training, education, and opportunities where few others may exist. In addition to those benefits, oil that is produced on Native-owned land directly benefits the shareholders of all 12 land-owning ANCs and the some 220 village corporations. Other RDC member companies, some of whom you've already heard from or will hear from later today, will further explain to you the negative impacts of HB 247 on their companies. These companies, both big and small, rely on a healthy and stable oil and gas industry. Another major concern that we have with House Bill 247 is that the administration has not conducted risk analysis on the bill's impact on the oil industry. The effect of this tax proposal must be fully reviewed, and unintended consequences, including potential impacts on future investment and production, must be considered. Our members are not asking for a tax decrease during this time of low commodity prices like other states and countries are considering, but we do request that as the state considers changes to tax policy, it do no harm to the state's largest industry and industry already facing significant economic hardship. Otherwise, we may soon learn that the more Alaska taxes companies, the less likely a company will invest here, and the more likely its limited capital will go to jurisdictions that do encourage investment. We are deeply concerned House Bill 247, if enacted, will force industry to reduce investments, which will lead to reduced oil and gas production and ultimately result in less revenue to the state, exacerbating the revenue crisis. In closing, I think it is important for Alaskans to remember that the oil industry is a major revenue producer for the state of Alaska, as the largest producer of revenue for the North Slope Borough, the city of Valdez, and the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Co-Chair Nagyak and Co-Chair Tallarico, members of the House Resources Committee, I thank you for the opportunity to provide RDC's perspective on House Bill 247 today.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Hall? Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
We'll take a brief break before we hear from the next presenter. Call the meeting back to order. Welcome Mr. Joe Bowie, Vice President of Lands and Resources, and Mr. Roy Tansy Jr., who is the Executive Director of ARTNA. Please come, identify yourself for the record and begin.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My name is Roy Tansy Jr. I live in Chugiak, and I'm the Executive Vice President of ARTNA Natia, the holding company of ARTNA Incorporated.
My name is Joe Bowie. I'm the Vice President of Lands and Resources for ARTNA Incorporated, and I live in Copper Center, Alaska.
Today we'd like to bring our concerns regarding the 025 A6 and A7 tax credits, which are currently set to expire on June 30th of this year. ARTNA is currently has ongoing exploration going on in its lands, adjacent to its lands out in the region, and we are currently using these tax credits for our incentive to do this work. We're on slide two. The intent of the legislature was to incentivize oil and gas exploration in underexplored basins, reduce the risk of development of local rural energy to Alaskans, create local energy source for rural residents, and reduce or eliminate the power cost equalization subsidies.
Go ahead.
Slide three. The Frontier Basin tax credits, as the 025A6, the first two exploratory wells drilled inside each of the six frontier basins receive 80% credits, or up to $25 million qualified expenditures. So $25 million is the cap. The 025A7, the first seismic project performed inside each of the six frontier basins, received 75% credit, or up to $7.5 million of the qualified expenditures. We, as ARTNA, have already used the seismic tax credits, about $2.4 million on a $3 million seismic tax credit investment.
Before you go any further, I would like to acknowledge that Representative Cole is with us. Thank you. Go ahead.
So in regards to the tax credits and this exploration, ARTNA would not be actually doing this exploration if the tax credits were not there. It's very important for us to mention that. Slide four, specific frontier basin regulations, pre-qualification approval for seismic and well, various well depths and setbacks from previous wells, submission of all data to Alaska Department of Natural Resources prior to credit award, public data disclosure of all data after 2 years, must provide energy source for rural energy needs, and the 025, A6, and 7 tax credits are not eligible for stacking like the 023. Slide number five, exploration program history. In April 2012, ARTNA applied for the State of Alaska Exploration License. In May 2012, the legislature approved Senate Bill 23 in December 2013. Otten received the Tolsona exploration license. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, we were just wondering, Senate Bill 23, we weren't remembering that. Was it Senate Bill 21 or is it Senate Bill 23?
Representative Tyler, through the chair, it was a Senate Bill 23. It was prior to Senate Bill 21.
Okay. Thank you.
In June 2014, received the Alaska Department of Natural Resource Commissioner's pre-qualification approval for the seismic. What we're trying to say here is that we, from the very beginning, have been very diligent on trying to get things going in our region under this program. On December 2014, we completed 40 miles of 2D seismic over the exploration area. And in April 2015, completed reprocessing of seismic data identifying 12 square miles of potential oil and gas trap. In May 2015, we submitted seismic data to the Alaska Department of Natural Resources Division of Oil and Gas. And in September 2015, received the Alaska Department of Natural Resources Commissioner's pre-qualification approval for a new well, the Tolsona Number 1 well. In February 2016, the majority of the permits have been approved. And in March of this 2016, final stages of the new well engineering and design were set to be complete. As you can see, the slide number six, the Copper Basin area map. Right now, we are looking at a project that is just off of the on state lands adjacent to Otna lands, and we're looking at a proposed well depth of 4,500 feet to go after gas. The area target is the structure of the Nelchina sandstone. In the past, we've had 11 wells drilled in the basin. All of these wells have shown some type of gas showing. The majority of the wells were drilled in the 60s and the 70s, back when they weren't really looking for gas. In fact, it was probably more of a nuisance. They were going for oil. So in the last 30 years, we've had only one exploration development project in the region, and that was done on Otna lands in 2005, 6, and 7, and it was called the Otna 119 well, which unfortunately they were unable to get into the formation. And so they did find gas, but they were unable to test it. That gas actually was showed at 94% methane, and the Tolsona Number 1 well has a potential for a great local source of fuel. Slide number 7, proposed a need for gas in Copper Basin. The community and economic development benefits are immense. There's huge potential for local employment, economic benefit, expanding local businesses, lowering high costs of our rural economy, and reducing out-migration, building infrastructure in the region. Right now, we've had a number of schools close. We've had a number of our shareholders, in fact, majority of our shareholders now live in the Matsu Anchorage area. And just today, there's restaurants that have closed in Glen Allen. We have one restaurant in the entire basin area there that is open year-round. And that's a huge cry from what we've had in years past. Slide number 8, the project overview. We did the seismic in the winter of 2014 and 15. It was 40 miles of new seismic. Majority of it on state land. Some private land was gone over. The current location you can see on this map, there is an easement that flows from south to north. We're going to expand on that easement and then move off of it to build a pad. The exploration will be on state lands, royalty, production tax to the state if successful, and improvement to the public access of recreational area. The project team, we do have one of our subsidiaries that's going to be playing a major part of the construction, Otna Construction. HXR Drilling Services is doing the majority of the engineering. Restoration Science and Engineering is doing the permitting. And then we have multiple Alaskan companies that are lending a hand to this project. And there's a number of state, local, federal agencies that are also partaking in making this project possible. I do want to mention the tremendous agency support As an example, the Department of Natural Resources Division of Oil and Gas Director has visited the region and the project site. Slide number 10, the project schedule. And you can see that this project schedule is pretty tight. It goes from June 2015 through August of 2016. The start of the pre-drilling program, the procurement process continuing to be ongoing, the securing of the 404 and the
plan of operations
permit submitted. currently, right now, we're at the beginning of the civil site work, and we hope to have the rig there within the next few months to do work. And you can also see the critical point in July 1st is the Frontier tax credits expire. Mm-hmm. Slide number 11. In conclusion, our request is critical for our project that the Frontier Basin 025, A6, and 7 tax credits are extended from June 30, 2016 to a future date. We recommend that 2022 to coincide with other tax credit expiration dates. This will greatly help the Tolsona project that is underway with a committed investment and a very tight schedule. ADNA also supports the 023 and 025 A1 through 4 Middle Earth tax credits to be kept in place as an incentive to the Frontier Basin exploration and development efforts by the explorers who have taken the risk and the commitment investment based on these incentives. Slide number 12, we want to thank our good partners. We'd like to thank the members of this committee for the opportunity to share our experience. We'd also like to thank the Alaska legislature, the governor, his staff, the citizens of the state of Alaska, and your support for the development of an affordable energy resource in our region.
Are you done?
That's
cool. Thank you very much. Are there any committee questions or comments?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
And I invite... to the extent it's possible, anyone in the room to clarify for me. But I was aware through the chair that there were some situations, Mr. Tansey, where pre-qualification was required and most where it isn't. Have you found that to be cumbersome or difficult? You noted here that most of your permits were approved. Can you give us just sort of a sense of how that works?
Representative Josephson through the chair, there's two different issues with the permitting. The one is the actual land use permitting, the regulatory permitting that goes along with any kind of project in the state of Alaska, and they are cumbersome, and a lot of them take up to 6 months. Some of them can be done in 30 days. As far as a pre-qualification with the Department of Natural Resources Division of Oil and Gas, basically we submit our findings, our intent, the cost schedule, that sort of thing, and usually we have either a yay or a nay back within probably 2 or 3 months. It's been as short as 30 days and it's been as long as 3 months.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
So the intent of the bill is to be more conservative and less liberal with credits. I think that's a fair statement. It's certainly not to be more liberal with them. But all things are possible, and we're here to listen. I'm just, what is it that you would be, well, I think you've indicated this, but these credits that expire in a few months, what is it that wouldn't get done that would have qualified were they to expire next summer instead of the coming summer? Does that make any sense?
It does.
Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, this is Roy Tansey. It's hard to say. We would actually be probably potentially pushing the deadline to have, we'll probably saw the rig out into the region. The majority of the costs for the drilling program have been the rig, and we're looking at probably $120,000 a day for rig costs and other essential services. So if this gets pushed out, this project gets pushed out to a point in which it kind of sits on top of that July 1st date, anything after that July 1st date is going to be pretty heavily impactful to our program. Right now, we expect a $9.4 million to $10 million investment on this drilling project. With the 025, A6, and A7 tax credits, we're looking at roughly 73% in return on that investment, and so we're looking at about $6.9 to $7.3 million in tax credits.
I'll try one more fast question.
Go ahead.
You indicated that at least some of the sites are on state land. That is interesting for us. How much of the development sites, or rather the exploration sites, are on state land, and how much aren't?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, all of the exploration drilling will, at this point, recur on state land. The formation itself is 100%, I believe, under state land.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
We'll take a brief recess. Call the meeting back to order. I'd like to welcome Mr. Jim Johnson from Linden Transportation Company and member of the Chief Alaska Competitive. Please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and begin. Welcome, Mr. Johnson.
We have more copies.
Chairman Nagiak and Chairman Tallarico, members of the committee. My name is Jim Johnson. I'm the chairman of the Linden Companies, and I'm the co-chairman of the Keep Alaska Competitive Coalition. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. By way of introduction, Linden is an Alaska truck, marine, and air transportation company who operates throughout Alaska with about 1,000 Alaska employees and hundreds of service partners throughout the state. The Keep Alaska Competitive Coalition was founded as the Make Alaska Competitive Coalition in 2011 to advocate for change in Alaska's oil tax policy to encourage investment in Alaska. As you may recall, production declined by more than 200,000 barrels per day under the uncompetitive tax policy called ACES. KEEP is a broad-based group of approximately 8,000 Alaskans, including Alaska businesses, Native corporations, individuals, and organized labor. We received no funding from the oil industry. After defeat of SB 21, a referendum, we thought we could retire our coalition, but here we are, facing another proposed change which would send Alaska backward in oil tax policy. I came to Alaska as a truck driver in 1967, and other than my military service, have lived in Alaska ever since. Alaska was my home before North Slope Oil. I operated a trucking company through the Alaska the pipeline construction era, and through the mid-80s recession, I led Linden from that time forward. Vicki and I have lived the dream in this great state, both from a business and personal perspective, fueled by a strong economy, driven by our resource industries. Personal and business opportunities over the past 49 years make me feel like the luckiest person on earth. I'm now nearing the end of my working career, and I'm spending much of my energy and my time working on behalf of future generations of Alaskans. I'm here today because I'm afraid that Alaska may revert to the economy I faced in 1967. An economy without the North Slope would be devastating for Alaska and Linden. At Linden, we would be forced to make massive layoffs of our outstanding employees as our state speeded toward economic ruin. I don't scare easily, but I can tell you I fear for our state and Linden's people if the legislature tries to solve Alaska's fiscal problems by imposing unreasonable taxes on our resource industries. How we deal with our fiscal challenge will determine if we retain the Alaska we have enjoyed since the development of Prudhoe Bay. Alaska needs to adjust and to live within our means, but we cannot do it on the backs of our resource industries. We may have to sacrifice a portion of our PFD, and we may need to pay taxes. In fact, we probably will need to pay taxes. To put my testimony into perspective, let's first acknowledge the situation we find ourselves in today with $30 oil. We all know the size of our current deficit, and we all know we need to deal with it sooner rather than later. Our state is facing a massive fiscal crisis unseen in more than 30 years. We thank the legislators and the governor who are willing to put Alaska's long-term economic future ahead of short-term politics. There is nothing more important for our state than to solve our budget deficit and build a sustainable economic future for our state. But we can't do it on the backs of an ailing industry that already pays most of Alaska's bills. I agree conceptually with much of the governor's plan. Use of the permanent fund earnings, reduction of our dividend program, reducing the operating budget, and instituting some new taxes. One part of the governor's plan that does concern me, however, is the proposal for yet another change to oil tax policy. I have three main points I want to discuss this evening. One, increasing oil taxes and reducing credits at a time when the industry is losing money on Alaska production sends the wrong message to an industry that has responded well to our desire to see more investment and more production, especially at a time when oil prices have declined. Two, maintaining a healthy oil-gas industry is vital to our future. If we want to keep oil flowing through the pipeline and keep any serious prospects for a gas line. Three, as we deal with the painful economic transition caused by low oil prices, we need to be mindful to protect the viability of all of our resource industries as they continue to be the major source of employment and income to Alaskans, not to mention important taxpayers. While passage of SB 21 does a better job of predicting revenues at low oil prices than the prior tax structure, HB 247 raises the tax, gross tax, from 4% to 5% and eliminates loss credits, adding a burden to the petroleum industry at a time that it's losing approximately $22 per barrel produced on the North Slope. Changing the credits is effectively a tax increase. As a state, we wanted the industry to produce oil that we know is expensive to get out of the ground, and we promised them an incentive to do that. They did just that. Despite these sobering times, the industry has upheld the commitment it made when the legislature passed SB 21. It pledged to increase investment, and it did, to the tune of $5 billion. That investment has led to more production and leveling off of the production decline of the pipeline. Industry is still investing substantially more in Alaska than other regions because SB 21 encourages investment. Compare Alaska to North Dakota, Texas, Canada, and most other provinces in the world, and we can be extremely thankful that we're living and working in Alaska today. An increased tax on the petroleum industry today would send a terrible message, namely that Alaska is a high-risk tax environment and that we are an unreliable partner that does not live up to its commitments. A natural response from the industry would be to curtail their investments and move them to a more stable and profitable oil province. And there are many, many opportunities for them out there. we would have made it very easy for them to cease investment here. What do you think would happen today if Linden told an oil company that we were raising your freight rates today by 25%? Obviously, they would shift their business to our competitors. Alaska, like Linden, competes for investment, and this is the wrong time to increase rates. HB 247 would mark the sixth major change in taxes in 11 years. Attracting investment requires a fair and stable tax structure. Tax credit policy should not be a whipsaw for filling the budget deficit. It should be a thoughtful approach to a stable and growing economy. Our oil production peaked at over 2 million barrels per day and is now approximately 500,000 barrels per day. To keep a minimum flow in the pipeline and to obtain the value of what oil remains in our state, we need an industry to continue drilling, continue investing, and have enough faith in us as predictable and reliable partners to invest $50 to $60 billion in a gas line. Continually changing our tax structure makes us predictable in the wrong sense. The oil and gas industry, like the mining and fishing industries, provides a major source of good paying jobs in our economy and hopefully will continue to do so well into the future. The tough choices that we have to make to reduce our deficit need to be done in a way that minimizes the shock to our economy in the next several years, and we must be mindful of the economic base that we need in the future. We are fortunate to have almost $60 billion in savings to help us with the transition toward an investment-based budget. Let's start by using earnings of those savings, as suggested by the governor, Senator McGuire, Representative Malott, and Representative Hawker, along with a reduced budget and carefully considered taxes and user fees to close the gap. We all know that taxes on a resource industry are politically easier than to tax our residents. But our resource industries are the last place we should look for quick tax revenue. They are the backbone of our economy, and in the case of oil and gas, they are swimming in an ocean of red ink. Raising taxes on the resource industries are the surest way to drive away investment, which is the only way we can grow our economy. Fortunately, we have the financial resources to not only survive, but to prosper. What we need now is the courage to responsibly continue to drive down costs, the cost of state government, and utilize the permanent fund as intended to fund state services. We will need to pay taxes ourselves. However, the last place which we should look for new revenue is to unfairly tax the very industries that drive our economic future. If we push them away, our economic future is hopeless. This is the time for Alaskans to support responsible fiscal policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bovey. Are there any committee questions or comments? Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Johnson, for coming. Appreciate everything that Linden has done and worked for in the industry. You know, we are sitting here with about $623 million of cash payments to make in credits this next year, as they're scheduled to be, which is, if we would do the permanent fund dividend by $1,000, that's about all, same amount. We have about 630,000 people to get the dividend, and $1,000, that's that same amount. But it wouldn't reduce our budget at all if we don't have some form of this bill, because all of that money would go out in cash credits, refundable cash credits. So I'm trying to figure out how we can do a responsible job of shepherding and reforming our budgets if we continue to spend at this high rate of tax credits, because you know, where do we get that?
Sorry for the mix up on your name, Mr. Jensen. I apologize. Please answer him.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I recognize the difficulty that you all face. This is a tough, tough challenge, and it's also very, very critical that we do it right. I don't claim to be an expert on tax credits, and I can't sit here and tell you that every tax credit is appropriate, and you should not be looking at some of that. But I would say that be very, very cautious of increasing taxes on the industry that we need so desperately to keep this economy strong.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And, Jim, I'm just trying to figure out whether your part of the service industry considers tax credits, what we pay out in cash tax credits, is the same thing as the tax increase that's in the bill? Are those two separate portions as you look at it and have to be considered somewhat differently?
Well, I think there's separate components within the bill, and I think we certainly need to be looking at all components. But to me, the most important thing is we do not have increased taxes, hard taxes, on the producing industry. Tax credits are important, and they're an investment. It's not just throwing money away. We're investing in future production, and I think we've got to be very careful when we start talking about eliminating them.
Thank you, Ms. Jensen.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Jensen. We'll take a brief recess. We have Mike Salzetti from the Homeowners Electric Association located in Kenai, and he wishes to testify. Go ahead, Mr. Salzetti.
Good evening, Representative Nagyek and Representative Tarico and all members of the House Resource Committee. My name is Mike Salzetti. I'm the manager of Fuel Supply and Renewable Energy Development at Homer Electric Association. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments this evening. Homer Electric Association provides power to the western half of the Kenai Peninsula. Our service area is a combination of remote communities, industrial complexes, small urban centers, and rural areas. Our service area runs as far south as Port Graham and Soldovia, and north to Nikiski, and east to the community of Sterling. Like most South Central electric utilities, HEA generates approximately 90% of our power via natural gas-fired generation. While we are working to diversify our generation portfolio with smart renewables, such as our proposed 5-megawatt hydroelectric project at Grant Lake, the Battle Creek diversion into Bradley Lake, and a potential landfill gas project, the fact is that HEA will continue to rely upon natural gas for a vast majority of our power generation. As many of you are aware, HEA recently became our own generation entity. But prior to this, we had to design and build a generation portfolio. These were exciting times at HEA, but it was a scary time to be entering the Cook Inlet gas market as a buyer. Gas prices were rising precipitously. The Singa gas storage facility was being constructed to help South Central Gas and Electric Utilities address deliverability issues and to mitigate risk. And South Central Utilities were conducting extensive due diligence on the possible importation of LNG to provide for our future gas supply needs. With the advent of the Cook Inlet oil and gas production tax credits, we saw a number of new producers and activities in the Cook Inlet. This includes Hillcorp, Fury, Bluecrest, AIX, Nordac, Cook Inlet Energy, and Apache. South Central Gas and Electric Utilities were able to sign firm gas contracts through 2018 and beyond. The LNG export facility on the Kenai Peninsula continues to operate, as does the Tesoro refinery. With the recent signing of a gas contract between HEA and Fury, we see the first significant decline in firm Cook Inlet gas prices in recent history. Contracts for baseload gas based upon the Hilcorp consent decree price are set at $7.42 for 2016. On April 1st, when our contract with Fury begins, HEA will be paying $6.50 per MCF. Through the term of the contract, we will realize a 12 to 22% discount to recently agreed upon baseload gas contracts. The Cook Inlet oil and gas production tax credits appear to be working. HEA encourages policy that ensures a tax regime that provides stability and predictability in the Cook Inlet, encourages exploration, development, and production that will ensure long-term supply of natural gas for the utilities and provide for economic prosperity for HEA's member owners. I will conclude my comments by stating that while we are excited about the 650 gas that we will soon be purchasing from Fury, last Thursday, the Henry Hub price for spot market natural gas was $1.78 per MMBTU. So we have a long way to go until our gas prices are on par with the lower 48. HEA appreciates the legislators' efforts in achieving a Cook Inlet oil and gas renaissance, and we look forward to policy that provides for continued oil and gas activity in the Cook Inlet. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zalcetti. Are there any committee questions or comments? If not, thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And I just wanted to understand. So the consent decree price was $7.42 for 2016. And you said on April 1st, your firm contract will go in at $6.50. Is that April 1st of 2016?
That's correct, in a few months, or 1 month, really, yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Zalcetti. We'll take a brief recess for the next presenter. That concludes the industry testimony this week. The committee sincerely appreciates the time, energy, and expense from all the testifiers this week. Is there any further business for the committee this evening? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so I just want to double-check. Doyon and Nana we're not going to hear from, but we have a letter from Nana and then another presentation from Doyon, or just the letter. Okay, and that's how we're... Okay, thank you so much.
Meredith Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to ask the same question just to make sure I was online.
Okay. For the record, you received the testimonies from those aforementioned entities. Any further questions? Is there any further business for the committee this evening? Our next committee meeting is Monday, March 7th from 1 to 3 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. to continue to hear the Department of Revenue's presentations from Mr. Ken Apper, Director of the Tax Division. We are adjourned at 6:55 p.m.